called Christians in Sport, who basically do exactly what it says on the tin. They're a group of people that love playing their sport, and they love Jesus. And I've loved many different types of sport, really, but as for a lot of people here tonight, my passion has always been football. And I've been an avid football fan since before I can remember, really. I love watching football. I quite like coaching football. But more importantly than all the rest, I love playing football. And I can still remember my first football match, if I think back to when I was 8 years old. I can remember a couple of things about that game vividly. I think we played Pouring Land. But what I certainly remember was that we lost. Have we got a Pouring Land fan at the back? Yeah? We lost. And we lost very heavily, and I think the score was indeed 17-1. So it was a bit of a shocker, really. And what made it even better was the other thing I remember is that I scored an own goal. And even better than that, it was a toe punt. So there was a lot of shame there. It was one of those games where the goalkeeper was about 2 foot tall, and the goal just seemed absolutely massive. But that still doesn't explain how we only managed to score one ourselves. So this hasn't put me off playing, because I'm still enjoying it today. And the theme, I believe, of this afternoon's football and a lot of what's been going on has been called Only a Game. And for me and for many others here, I'm sure you'll agree that that's simply not true. Football is more than just a game. I can certainly remember times when I've sat there watching the results come in on the grandstand Vinnie printer at 5-5 on a Saturday tea time. And it flashes up that my team's Hibernian. And Hibs have just lost 3-0 at home to whoever's bottom of the league. And you sit there and you're absolutely gutted, and your mum looks across at you and says, "Oh, don't worry, Peter, it's just a game." And it's the worst words anyone can say to you at that particular time. So, for football may be a game, but as we heard, as Pelé said, it is the most beautiful game in the world. And if you go anywhere around the globe, you'll find people that love football, that love enjoying that. People are kicking a ball around in parks, up and down the whole universe, really. And they might not even have a ball. There's people in the favelas in Brazil, I've had mates who've gone out there, and these people can't afford footballs, but they'll still scrunch up bits of paper or use a tin can or anything they can get their hands on just so they can enjoy a game of football. Football's something which is capable of producing such an extraordinary range of emotions. We watched videos, some of you might have seen some of those clips as we came in, and yeah, just extraordinary incidents that football produces. I was up in Aberdeen in the summer, and I randomly bumped across Aberdeen Museum and found that it had a big football exhibition and a collection of photos of football from several decades back and from all across the world. And some of those were just incredible. The passion that was captured in people's faces and the incidents and the euphoria which football can create, that so there's few other things in life which can do that. And football provides an identity for people. Up and down the country on a Saturday afternoon, you'll find hundreds of thousands of people who are going along to matches, and they're dressed up in their hat and scarf if it's the winter, and for many of them, the latest replica shirt, which they might even, if they're incredibly devoted, they've got their favourite player's name on the back, and that's set them back £45. And you know, it's that sort of extreme identity which football can produce for people. They'd be willing to do that. They'd travel 300 miles on a wet Wednesday afternoon to go up to Newcastle to watch their team get beat 3-0 and come all the way home and they think nothing of it and do it again next season. It's incredible. And these days, football also creates such an immense sort of media interest. If you read any of the national papers, there's up to 10 pages devoted just to football each day. And if you've got Sky Television, there's channels which, I think if you've got MUTV, Manchester United Television, you can watch about them all day, every day. In fact, if you didn't have to go to school or you were rich enough not to have to work, you could probably watch back-to-back games of football should you wish to throughout the week. So in many senses, football is more than just a game. A few years ago, there was an advert on television which told us, "Eat football, sleep football, drink Coca-Cola." Now, I suppose some of you might be able to remember that. I think, apart from anything else, if you were to live like that, it certainly wouldn't be very good for your teeth. And another statement, which Bill Shankly, one of the greatest football managers of all time ever said was, he said this: football isn't a matter of life and death. It's far more important than that. Some people were even finishing that sentence before I got there. It's a well-known statement. And Bill Shankly was a footballing legend, and there's certainly few things which I would beg to differ on him in terms of footballing matters, but here I'm afraid I will have to disagree. For as we've looked at, football is a sport of great significance, but there are things which are more important than football. And as Phil talked about in his prayer, when we elevate football, we're in danger. When we place football on a pedestal and we make it a religion, and when we take great footballers of our modern era and we make them as gods and we worship them, we're going too far. David Beckham is not God. Sorry to break it to anyone here who thought he was. He is an individual with an incredible free kick, and we should be thankful that God has blessed him with that talent. But he is not someone to be worshipped, someone to be respected, and we can look up to him and think, yes, he's a great footballer, I aspire to be like that. But God created him, God gave him those gifts, and he's cultivated them. And it's important also to remember that when the media place all their interest on David Beckham and they'll follow him around 24/7 and David Beckham eats a burger and that's front page news, you know, God takes just as much of an interest in my life and just as much of an interest in each of your lives as he does David Beckham. We're just as special to him as he is. So while football at times may feel like life and death to some of us, in the eternal scheme of things, it really isn't all that important which football team I choose to support, or how many goals I score this season, or if I missed the penalty last weekend. It's really not that important. At the end of the day, all this will count for nothing. It's going to pass away. But one thing will remain, and that is Jesus Christ. And the most important thing, and all that is going to last, is him, and me choosing to know him. I wonder if you can cast your minds back to the World Cup last summer. It already seems like such a long time ago. But Brazil have just won the World Cup. They've beaten Germany in the final. This is the absolute pinnacle of these players' career. In terms of footballing status, you can't get any higher. They've just won the World Cup, the greatest trophy on earth. And how did these players react? Well, several of them were Christians. And it was really interesting to watch on television. As the final whistle blew, their instant reaction was that they dropped to their knees, and about five or six of them formed a prayer huddle, got down, put their faces on the ground, and they gave thanks to God. And then, several moments later, they were spotted running around with the famous trophy held aloft, with t-shirts with 100% Jesus, or I love Jesus, or similar type slogans written across the front of their shirts. And this was being screened all across the world, several hundred million people watching this. For these players knew that this success was of great importance to them, but they knew that at the end of the day, this would pass away, that the glory would fade, that it would diminish, that they'd look back in years to come, and yes, they would think, we've won the World Cup. But that feeling doesn't last forever. They knew that to know Jesus Christ is even better than to win the World Cup. Now, a player who's been in the football headlines a lot recently is Rio Ferdinand, with his missing a drugs test and all the controversy which has surrounded that. And a few years ago, Rio Ferdinand was in the news for another major thing which he did, was that he became Britain's most expensive footballer when he was transferred from Leeds United to Man United for a figure of around 30 million. Now, think about that, 30 million pounds. That is a lot of money. I mean, to pay that for anyone is absolutely unbelievable. To pay it for a defender is criminal. But football has become big business, and there's many huge transfer fees. I mean, I see back page headlines, and there's a player that's gone for £5 million, and it's got to the stage now where often I don't even know who his name is, and he's going for £5 million. It's incredible the amount of money that's been generated in football through television money and several other sources. But it's got me thinking, what do you think you would be worth in a transfer fee? How much would someone be willing to pay for you? And I want to talk tonight about the greatest transfer fee in the history of the world. And it's not Rio Ferdinand. And it's not Louis Figo. And it's not even Peter Crouch, for those of you that are Norwich fans. But it's Jesus Christ and what he chose to pay for you. For while football directors and big business may shell out cash loads of money, Jesus Christ paid for something far more important than that. He gave up his life for us. We're going to read a passage which Dawn read for us earlier. It's 1 Peter 3, verse 18. And it simply says, Christ died for sins, once for all, the righteous for the unrighteous, to bring you to God. So Christ died for sins. A sin's a bit of an old-fashioned word these days, and one which isn't bandied around too often. But sin is just anything which we have done against God. Anything which we have done wrong, which can hurt God, and things which can hurt other people as well. And none of us are perfect. Each one of us has sinned, the Bible tells us. Each one of us has fallen short of the glory of God. So we might look around, and I might think, I'm not that bad a person compared to him. You know, look at the things he does. I'm quite a good person, really. But in the eternal scheme of it, like, none of us are perfect. Each one of us has done wrong things. And that means each one of us needs forgiveness for those wrong things which we have done. For these things cut us off from God. They form a barrier between us and him. And God is just, so he can't allow us to do all these wrong things. He must punish the sin. But at the same time as just, God is love, and God's justice and his love met when he sent Jesus Christ into the world to die for us. He sent his son to earth, and he was killed on a cross, and he receives the punishment which each one of us deserve for the wrong things that we have done. And you'll note the verse also says, once for all. So while if you're a Norwich fan and you may be used to loan deals at the moment and Darren Huckabee and wondering if he'll stay and how long he'll stay for, here we know that Jesus is once for all. This isn't a loan deal, this is a permanent transfer. And unlike many top footballers these days who seem to have a complete lack of loyalty and will walk out on a contract after 5 minutes because they get paid out on it, we know that Jesus isn't like that. Jesus is 100% trustworthy. We can completely rely on him. He's not going to walk out on his contract. So it's the righteous for the unrighteous, simply meaning those right with God. Us who weren't right for God, Jesus has died for us, being one that is right with God. And through doing that, he's restored our relationship with God. He's done for us what we could never do for ourselves. He paid the greatest price for us, which we could ever imagine. He bought our forgiveness with his life. And on the third day, he rose again, and he defeated death. And now we can be thankful that he rules forever with the Father. So the transfer fee has been paid. Jesus has shown me, he's shown each one of you how much he loves you by dying on that cross for us. He's shown us how much he wants us as part of his team. He's done everything he possibly can to buy you. And that leaves us with a choice to make. We must either choose to accept or reject this lucrative offer which God has put before us. And if we accept, we know that we can enter into a relationship with Jesus and with the Father. And in doing so, we can receive all the blessings which go with that. We too defeat death. We too live forever. What a fantastic promise that is to us. If we reject Jesus' offer, we'll have to accept the consequences and face the serious punishment which we've looked at how our sin deserves. If we go on saying, no, God, I'm not interested, I don't want you in my life, in the end, God's going to accept that decision. And Jesus won't be taking our place on the cross because we haven't accepted what he's done for us. So Jesus is there. The contract's there. It's been signed. He wants you to play in his team. This is the single biggest decision which each one of us will have to make in our entire lives. And the decision is this: are you going to accept to play in Jesus' team or not?